Hi, today's March 12, 2017. This is Movie Views Podcast number 198. I'm Todd Agasol with my good friend John Westfall, who has disappeared from my Skype favorites list for reasons I do not.
Our personal theory right now is that Skype is just trying to break us up.
Yep. Doesn't want us to podcast to our fives or maybe tens of listeners, but we'll.
Yeah. Skype's jealous.
Yeah. So I wanted to start off with an update on my Chrome OS experience on the Samsung Chromebook Plus. And as you might guess, I want to expand on what I said earlier because I've really been enjoying it. So, for example, from after processing the podcast I recorded last weekend, I used my Windows notebook on Sunday night to do that because that's where I do all the processing of audio files. Although I record on a Mac, by the way, because I don't know how else to record on anything else. One of the things I need to resolve someday. But anyway, starting after Sunday night, I did not boot up a Mac or a PC until yesterday to record a podcast, Comics Use podcast. So basically, I recorded that at night. So 5.5 days with just using the Chromebook Plus. For most of the stuff I do at home, except for recording podcasts, it was just fine. Browsing, watching videos. I didn't draw on it last week, although I did try it the very first day or day after I got it. So it's been really a joy to use. It's been really wonderful to use it. I'm really surprised. I thought I would like it. I was pretty sure I would like it, but I didn't think I would like it. Well, maybe not liking is not the key factor. I didn't think it would be capable enough to simply ignore other devices except for specialty needs like, for example, recording a podcast, processing an audio file. Maybe if I were doing a lot more photography or video, processing that sort of thing on it, although I think you can do it. So I slapped in a 64 gigabytes of micro SD card, so it's got quite a bit of, relatively speaking, it's got quite a bit of storage now. It's been a eye-opening experience. I don't think I would have been happier with the earlier Chromebooks, which are slower and did not run Android apps, but this has been a good experience.
And that earlier Chromebook, I think, is what a lot of people still think of when they think Chromebook. And so I know at least in the geek community, there are people who are very much still going, I don't know about this whole idea, and they really think of that first iteration. So yeah. It's good to spread the word that while yes, you can't do absolutely everything, you can do most things, and that's a good thing.
Yep, agree. And I don't blame people for thinking that it's not suitable for them, and for many people, it's not. I mean, if you're a high-end photographer, probably not. If you're processing video, probably not. If you're recording a podcast, at least until I can find a solution. No. Of course, I can't record a podcast on Windows either, as I mentioned. So, I use Audio Hijack on a Mac, and it's the only thing I know that does this so simply. But yeah, good experience.
Even the other method I could think of would require a Mac or Linux, because the software I've used forever, Soundflower, lets me reroute audio on my Mac and split audio off, and you can create MIDI devices and all that. That's a little more complex than Audio Hijack, but I don't know of any easy solution for Windows for that.
Yeah. I think there are a couple of apps that, I keep threatening to try with you, but I just never remember to actually do so. Maybe next weekend we'll try that. The problem is...
The last Windows sound thing I tried to do, I used to play weekly gaming sessions with one of our friends, Jason Dunn, and a few other people, and we would Skype while we were gaming. It was PC gaming, and I would have a soundboard app that let me play sounds over Skype, like little humorous audio clips and things like that, and that was a pain. Now I could probably get that set up within a couple of minutes on a Mac.
Yeah. Okay, now moving on, and speaking of pains, I haven't seen these yet, although you say you have, and that's apparently advertisements are showing up in Windows 10 File Explorer.
Yeah, Microsoft has decided to give us ads, which we are just so delighted about.
Yeah.
I've seen them on my Surface Pro 4, which kind of surprised me because that is a domain member PC and it's running Enterprise. So it's sort of a weird thing to be hawking to people on that platform. My wife, I saw them on her Windows 10 Home Edition PC. So, yeah, these are not hugely obtrusive. They aren't big, flashy things. They're easy to get rid of. But they are a bit annoying that Microsoft has decided to bake ads directly into the OS.
Yeah. Now, fortunately, as you mentioned, there is a way to turn it off. And I'll have a link in the blog that accompanies this podcast from Paul Theroux, Theroux.com, on how to do this. It's a kind of a couple of clicks and you're done. So they're annoying, but they're not inevitable, I guess is the word.
Yeah,
they are on by default. I still haven't seen them. I'm not complaining, but I still haven't seen them. Or if they are there, they're so unobtrusive, I haven't noticed them.
I find I get mine to show up just by opening up Windows Explorer, kind of wherever the default goes to, like the All My Files view, and it'll be right above my files, right below the line. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, at work I have an enterprise Windows, so maybe that's why it's not showing up there. Although you said it's showing up on yours.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it at home because I haven't turned on the Windows machine at home since last week, Sunday.
It's because you have that blue keyboard and I have the black keyboard.
That's right.
That's really the only difference between our work-issued Surface Pro 4s.
Yeah, obviously the blue keyboard is superior, I should say.
Yeah. They just figure you don't need that extra space in OneDrive.
Okay, next thing is if you are – and John and I are both fans of Python, but, you know – admittedly, I have not programmed in Python in years. Probably 2-3 years since I've last programmed in Python. So I was really interested when I noticed that PyCharm, which has a really nice professional IDE for Python, has a free version. I think they have a community version of their professional one too, but they have a free educational version that apparently is kind of geared to help you learn Python. So... Yeah, so I will provide a link in the show notes to that, but basically it's by JetBrains, so JetBrains.com, and you can go look for PyCharm Educational or PyCharm Edgy.
And very cool.
Yeah. And the next question is, what does it run on? The screenshots are Mac OS X-ish or Mac OS looking. I didn't even look if it runs on Windows. Some requirements. It's Mac only, so Mac OS.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're running Windows, well, too bad.
It really is anymore to get the best out of everything you need to have a Mac and a PC.
Yeah.
And a
Chrome OS and a Chromebook.
Mm-hmm. It's really weird how that sort of like oscillates every 5 years or so, where it's like, well, what's all the cool stuff on? I think for a while there was Windows that oscillated to Mac, and now it's cool stuff on both platforms.
Yeah. And I should say, although I haven't looked much into it, I think Visual Studio 2017 is now out for folks interested. I think they do have a free community edition also. So if you're in Windows, you may want to take a look at that.
Cool.
Okay.
So
you discovered something?
Yeah, I have some. I have some updates this week about things I've talked about briefly in the past. The first is my MacBook Pro. I think I mentioned about 3 or 4 podcasts ago that I was having issues with File Vault on it, that if I enabled File Vault when I would boot up, the MacBook would take forever to boot into the OS, and when it did, the keyboard and mouse would stop working almost immediately. And I ended up reimaging, because I restored from a Time Machine backup. That didn't fix it. Then I just reinstalled everything. That didn't fix it. And I don't travel a lot, but I do like to have File Vault turned on if I can. Mm-hmm. So yesterday, on a whim, I was playing around with it again, and it was giving me some issues. And I remembered that I had bought about a year ago, maybe a little over a year ago, this little SD card reader from a company called Base. I guess it's probably Base Key, BASEQI.
Mm-hmm.
And the Q is capitalized, so I assume they either probably call it Base Key is how they're pronounced.
Key.
Or, yeah, could be that
Chinese, thing. But anyway.
So, this little SD card reader fits inside the SD card slot, and it takes a micro SD card, and it sits flush at the side of the computer. So, for people who don't use their SD card slot that often on their MacBook, this is a quick way to kind of load in a SD card that had become a secondary drive.
Hmm.
So, for the heck of it, I took it out. And all of a sudden, everything went away. And I rebooted to start File Vault, and it booted right in, no problems. even did another boot just to see, and there's no problem. So right now, File Vault is about, it says 35 minutes remaining on its completion, mm-hmm. and I'll probably do a couple more reboot tests after we finish podcasting, but that might have been it. And I can understand how the operating system might wonder what exactly that SD card reader is, because typically SD cards are not inserted all the time. So, and plus the little reader has its own little bit of logic on it, because it takes a micro SD and then punches it up to full SD. So there might be some logic on there that kind of confuses. It did confuse Apple Diagnostics. Apple Diagnostics took about 25 minutes to run instead of 2 or 3 minutes to run. And when it ran with the thing installed, it said there might be a problem with the SD card. So I like the idea, but maybe there's an issue with my MacBook and that little SD card reader.
Yeah, it could be.
Then another update. So a few months ago, I have kind of had this interesting relationship with a company called Freedom Pop for a number of years now. Freedom Pop offers low-cost voice over IP telephony for cell phones. Basically, you can bring your own device and hook into their network, and for really low rates, get a phone number, send text messages, receive calls. And they have data options, and you know, they basically act as a little bit of a very low-cost MVNO off of 4G and 3G networks. And they were running a promotion where for $30, mm-hmm. they sent you a Huawei Union, which is not a bad little Android phone, not a great little Android phone, but not a bad one. And you would get kind of the entry-level tier of their service for free. And after you pay for the $30 and the activation, they just call that an activation fee. You can select whatever plan you want. You can just drop it down to no data or two. I think they have a free tier. It's like 200 megabytes a month. So it's good for a little burner phone or a little extra phone that you want to have in your bag. I had gotten this phone a couple of weeks ago, and it would not activate. And I kept looking. It wouldn't activate the cellular data. I kept looking, and I was in the 3G coverage area, but I went out to Atlanta this week for a conference, which we'll talk more about in a moment, powered this thing up when I got out there, and it saw a 4G LTE signal, worked just fine, no problem. So even though they tell me that I have coverage, I don't really have coverage.
Where you
That's
live.
That's not a problem. What?
Where you live.
Yeah, where I live.
Yeah,
it's not really a problem because where I'm at, I'm always by my home Wi-Fi, and so it would be really when I travel to big cities and stuff that I'd want to have a little extra device with me. I can't really complain too much other than I wish they would update their coverage map.
Yeah, I think, and I'm not 100% sure, but I think Freedom Pop uses Sprint service.
That might be the case.
Yeah. So if you you might want to see if the Sprint coverage map is more accurate for you.
I will do that as we start talking about our next thing.
All right, why don't you start?
Okay, so the next thing that I had up today, and I mentioned that I just came back from a trip. I was in Atlanta for 3 days taking a group of students to a conference and presenting at the conference myself. And I was very proud of my students. They even won a trivia contest in addition to having a number of good comments on their work. So that's always good stuff to have happen. And as we were out there, I realized that what I carry in my kind of everyday carry bag plus my travel carry bag is a little bit different than it used to be. I used to carry a little bit more, and now I'm carrying a little bit less. And so I figured it might be a good time for us to have our semi-regular what's in your travel bag discussion and see what we're doing and what we're not doing, especially since it's spring break season coming up. And both Todd and I, as Todd puts on his, we both travel without checked baggage. So we really don't want more than we have to have. So off the top of the list, lately, I've been taking my MacBook Pro, which is kind of my home/personal device, and my Surface Pro 4, my work device. The Surface Pro is small enough that it's really just is, in my mind, taking one laptop and a tablet. I also take an iPad mini, because that's where I do most of my casual gaming and reading, and my iPhone. chargers for the above, which aren't too cumbersome. I really enjoy, I have this Belkin 3-outlet Surge Plus Mini that we can put a link to in the show notes. And this has been kind of my go-to travel surge protector for a while now. Now, it did mean that I had to get some longer cables because this sits on a wall. It doesn't, it's not like a regular surge protector. But the two USB ports that it has are 2-amp USB ports. So they can charge pretty much anything you can throw at them, which is important if you have a full-size iPad or an iPad Pro. Next up, Anker Lightning Cables. Anker is a company that the more and more that I buy from them, the happier I am with the stuff that I'm buying. They seem to have kind of the sturdiest lightning cables on the planet. So I have a very long Anker Lightning Cable. I think it's the same length as my Apple Watch charger, which is, you know, like 6 feet or something like that. So it, pretty much wherever I have to put that Belkin outlet Surge Plus, I can get a cable moved over from it. Do you find that when you're in hotel rooms, you can't find good charging locations, Todd?
You know, it really depends. I have to say I've been really fortunate for my last couple of years of trips where the hotels have been really good about placing outlets in reasonable locations. In fact, they're a little, I guess it's a you would call it a boutique hotel in Paddington, London, had like a bay of not only outlets, for which I needed adapters, of course, but it also had like audio and video plugins right at kind of desk level, which is kind of neat. I'll go see if I have a photo and post it on the blog if I can find it.
Yeah, it seems like hotels, you know, if they've renovated in the last 10 years, they're putting outlets right next to the bed, not behind the bed or next, you know, on the wall behind the table.
You got to move the bed and find
table.
The outlet. Yeah. Unplug a lamp.
Yeah, exactly. But I still find every so often a modern hotel where it's just, you know, it's not right next to the bed. It's a good 2 or 3 feet. So I find that having that long Anker Lightning cable really helps, because even if I don't undo it all, if I just pull out a couple of inches from it, you know, I kind of keep it in its little Velcro tie, it still gives me kind of more flexibility than having a regular size lightning cable.
Here's an observation that, quite frankly, I don't know if it's still true, but I know a couple of years ago when I was at a couple of, well, I guess you'd call it higher end hotels, like a Grand Hyatt or Embassy Suites or things like that, the more expensive hotels don't have as many outlets or free Wi-Fi. Where the less expensive hotels have great free Wi-Fi and lots of outlets and they're very convenient. I don't understand this weird dichotomy, but it's the less you pay, the more you get.
I was at a Grand Hyatt this week, and interestingly enough, the Wi-Fi, they did have complimentary, like, low-tier Wi-Fi, which actually, the first day, I actually got a free upgrade because of the conference rate to their second tier of Wi-Fi. So I tried that for the first day. It worked really well. And then the next day, I just went, you know what, in case they don't actually comp me this, I'm just going to go for the first tier. And the free complimentary Wi-Fi was actually pretty decent. I was able to do what I needed to do on that, even connecting a VPN, et cetera.
Yeah.
But yeah, the outlet situation, they had lamps that had outlets built in at the base, which can be troublesome. Yeah. It's nice, but it's troublesome if you have something thick that you need to plug in.
Yeah.
That's why I like the Belkin Surge Plus, because it lets you rotate the plug 360 degrees. So whatever orientation you need to get it in so that the ports are where you need them, it's easy to do that. So, yeah, I agree. The higher-end ones tend to be a little bit weirder, but the Grand Hyatt had what I would consider an acceptable grade of technology and internet. And also contactless hotel room keys. So not MagStripe, but NFC, which is nice because I didn't have to worry so much about my cell phone nuking them as much as I – you know, I always nuke at least one hotel room key a year, it seems, by putting it in the wrong pocket. So in addition to having those things, I also have something called a Time Porter by 12 South. It basically looks like a glasses case, the sort of case that you keep your glasses in, but it's for an Apple Watch. Huh. And inside, you can coil your charging cable around. As we've already said, the Apple Watch charging cable is ungodly long. Mm-hmm. So you can coil it around the external part of the inside, and then in the middle, you can put two or three spare Apple Watch bands. Huh. So you can kind of take whatever bands you want and have them right there. You can use it at night, kind of angled upward as a alarm clock stand for your Apple Watch. That's kind of what I do with my watch when I'm at home. And when you travel, you can just leave it closed and just place your Apple Watch on it for charging. So I've been very happy with it. So it
charges the watch?
Yeah, the charger kind of, you embed your charger right in the top. And so you just lay your watch on it and it connects up.
Okay, so I don't have an Apple Watch. So how does this work? So do you still need the Apple charger and you put it inside of this thing? Or how does that work?
Yeah, so you take your charger. Yeah. You start by putting the round edge in the little cutout hole on the top of the mm-hmm, case. Mm-hmm. And then you feed the cord. You kind of wrap it around the outside, the exterior of the case. And then, so it actually leaves a very nice tucked in appearance when you are done with it. It kind of slips right in your bag and you don't have cable mess all over the place. Hmm. So that's what I do for my Apple Watch. Then I usually carry a mouse, usually the Microsoft Arc mouse for the Surface Pro. Might bring an Apple Magic mouse if I'm going to need to use a mouse with my my MacBook. I could probably get away with just the Arc mouse, but I don't really like the idea of trying to repair and unpair, all that sort of thing. I bring my AirPods, which I got a lot of use out of on this trip. This is one of the first trips I've really had the AirPods for, and they were used pretty much. I ran them down at least 2 out of the 4 days to low
and
charge.
And you didn't lose any?
And wired. I did not lose them at all. Hmm. Wired headphones for the computers, just because it's easier sometimes to use the wired headphones. Had a really interesting experience. So I have this little planner book that we issue our students at Delta State in our first year seminar program, and it's got a little bit of a vinyl cover on it. And I always carry it with me because I have some notes in it and a few other things. But I realized that at the Grand Hyatt I was staying at, they had a glass-topped desk.
The bane of all mice.
Yes. This little vinyl planner was the perfect mouse pad size. Nice. So I definitely recommend that if you're ever looking for a mouse pad. If you have anything that's even like a cheap little planner, it'll work well.
Yeah.
I usually carry a few small multi-tools, keychain gadgets like a Swiss Army knife, a little portable pill bottle. So little things in case I need to tighten a screw or, I don't know, Swiss Army knife shank someone, whatever. Whatever I need, I have a little tool for it. And then these next few things didn't make the cut this time because I didn't really need them. An extended battery of some sort. I did take a small one I could throw in my everyday bag. Mm-hmm. But the luggage I actually used was my Blue Smart carry-on, which is expensive. I backed it on Kickstarter a few years ago, and it has a built-in battery.
Do you fly or drive for this trip? Because it's kind of far from where you are, isn't it?
I drove for this one. It was about 450 miles.
Okay.
One way. So it was, not too bad.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll bring an HDMI to mini display or some other adapter for either presenting or watching movies from a laptop to TV. Mm-hmm. I also have this little 2 terabyte portable drive that I'll occasionally bring with me. That's kind of essentials, movies, media, stuff like that, and what I call a life backup, just sort of files that I might need if something were to happen and I was traveling for an extended period of time. Hmm. And the last thing on my list isn't really something you pack. It's an app that I've really enjoyed using. My wife and I use it for our grocery list. It's called AnyList.
I think you mentioned this, yeah.
But for travel, it's awesome. I have basically a 2-pack list. And before I pack, I go in and I kind of clear all the check boxes on it. And then I see all the stuff I've ever packed in the past.
Right.
And I sort of just check the ones that I'm going to need for this trip. And then a few days later, when I'm actually packing, I go in and I check them off as I put them in. So it's a great way to keep kind of a comprehensive list of everything you normally take on certain trips. Then go in and do a first pass and go, okay, I'm not going to need that, but I will need that. I'm not going to need that. Oh, I need to add something that I've never needed before. And then 3 days later, use it to check off everything. And then when you're in your hotel room, you can use it again to make sure you have everything as you check things off. So. That's my list. So it's technically 12 things. One's an app, and 3 of them I didn't actually take this time. But carry-on bag, clothing for 3 days, and just a little shoulder bag for everyday carry stuff.
To me, this is a really long list. I mean, because you and I both used to travel with a lot of stuff. I mean, a lot of stuff. It's a wonder we ever got through airport security. But lately, by lately, I should say since the iPad came out, so maybe not that lately. So 2010, the iPad came out, I think. And by 2011, I was trying not to carry a notebook anymore, sometimes successfully, sometimes not. I ended up carrying a MacBook Air for a while because the iPad just couldn't do all the stuff I needed at the time. But I ditched the notebook several years ago. And so I no longer carry a notebook. And as John said, I never, like him, I don't check in baggage as of last year, which means I had to reduce my load even further. I used to carry, you know, two power strips, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, for me, it's an iPhone, a Nexus 6, and that's kind of important because the Nexus 6 is on Google Fi, which means mm-hmm. I get free, well, not free, low-cost international roaming. So, for example, last year I spent, 8-9 days in Scotland, and then another five or six days in London with my daughter. And I think my total bill for those two trips, total roaming charges, was like $9.50. $9.50. So, and an iPad Mini 4, which basically is my notebook computer these days,
mm-hmm.
Usually with a keyboard of some kind. Moto 360 watch, except I forgot to take that to London last time, but managed to survive without a smartwatch. So, smartwatch is not essential, as I found. Anker multi-port charger, which charges pretty much everything except a watch. So, I got to carry a separate charger for the watch. I bought a Qi charger, you know, wireless mm-hmm. Qi charger. Well, the regular watch charger is wireless too, but I bought a small Qi charger, but it's not very reliable. You have to put the watch exactly in the right place, and I don't understand why, because the Qi charger's surface is larger than the watch's base. So I'm not exactly sure why, but unless you put it exactly right, it doesn't charge, and it doesn't seem to charge fast, so I don't think I'm going to travel with it anyway, so it's not on my list.
It's interesting, though, that Anker multi-port charger is actually what I use at my bedside at home for all the stuff that I regularly charge, random tablets and stuff like that. Those are really nice, those 5-port multi-ports.
So I've got a 10-port in my – it just sort of sits at home all the time. And I travel with I think it's a 6-port.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like I said, except for the watch, I think it charges everything. I do still carry a mini surge protector power strip, and that's mostly for the watch. And of course, I don't plan to go international anytime soon, but if you do, you're going to need, you know, some kind of adapter. But most devices these days will switch voltage and cycles, so you don't have to carry that kind of adapter anymore, a regulator type adapter, which is kind of mm-hmm. nice. You just need a physical one. I also carry noise cancellation earbuds by a company named August, which I know you've never heard of. I've never heard of. They work great. They're like $40-something. I was shocked how well they work, actually, because when I tested them at home, I didn't think they worked that well. But in the airplane, they really do cut down the low-frequency noise. It was pretty impressive, especially for something that's, you know, under $50. And I still carry a Canon PowerShot with a 30x optical zoom, because, you know, sometimes you just need that zoom when you're traveling mm-hmm. someplace you've never been. Kind of.
Yeah, I didn't put it on my list, but I have a Panasonic Lumix that has a 12x zoom on it, optical zoom. And I'll use that. I'll take that, and I'll take that along with a SD card reader for my iPhone so that I can basically shoot some photos and then upload them to Google Photos and everything else through the iPhone camera roll and all that.
Yeah, that's the one missing link in my current travel is I don't have a backup for my digital camera photos. What I do is for a few, and by few I mean literally like, you know, single-digit percentage, because I'm taking a lot of photos. The Canon does have built-in Wi-Fi, which I can wirelessly move photos to my iPad or iPhone. Mm-hmm. So I'll do that, you know, just to post to Facebook so friends can see what I'm doing and stuff. But other than that, I'm not backing up from the camera when I'm traveling. That is
the option I have. Yeah, I've had kind of a love-hate relationship with the idea of getting a new point-and-shoot because I don't use them that often.
Yeah, I hear you.
But they are – when you really want one, you really want one.
Yeah.
And so like this year I've got a wedding that a friend's wedding, so I might pick up a new one because my Lumix is about 6 years old now. It's got a little scratch on the lens, and you know, I'd love something. It's got 12 megapixel as its max rating, so I'd like to get something a little new. But then I look at it and I go, well, to get what I want, it would be sort of expensive, and I'm not going to use it all the time, but you know, maybe it'll inspire me to go out and do some more photography with I have some nice cameras over here that I never take out, so
those are too big, yeah, right?
Yeah, maybe a new little power shoot or something like that would make me decide to take out the nice stuff like the EOS Digital Rebel and stuff like that. So
yeah, and you know, the thing about having a zoom is just the most important part to me. I have a, you know, you and I both have this iPhone 7 Plus, which has a 2x optical zoom or something akin to it. It's not a digital zoom. And it's good. It's useful. But sometimes, you know, having a 24 or 30x zoom is really important. Another thing I would often is offer to use a caution, since you use Google Photos to back up your photos like I do, is that Google Photos will only back up to 16 megapixels for free. Mm-hmm. If you want something, you know, more than that, I think you have to pay. So that's the, and I think my current, what is my current camera? I think my current camera is like at 12 megapixels.
I'm actually, well, since you were talking about it, I pulled up some of Canon's lineup because I haven't looked at their stuff. And they've got a PowerShot G9 that has this really cool retro look to it. So it's like, maybe that's the tempting thing. I'll actually get something that looks like a camera from, you know, 20, 25 years ago versus. Yeah.
So I think I actually have a G9. That's kind of old, I think.
Well, this is a G9X.
Oh, okay. Mark. Yeah, so the G9, for folks who haven't seen the G line from Canon, it's basically, yeah, like John says, it's basically a very retro look. I'm not sure what you would compare it to, maybe an old Leica or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like a camera, a camera's camera versus.
Yeah, it does.
Some little,
and you can get a case for it that is like the camera's case.
That's right.
Like, you know,
a hard body case.
Yeah.
Hard shell case, which I have. Sorry, it's kind of foggy in Hawaii and I'm coughing. But in any case, so my list a little bit shorter than John's. I carry much less than I used to before, where I'd have a entire little travel bag in my packed suitcase with like two power strips and, you know, because I believe in redundancy, and Ethernet cable and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that, which I no longer carry. Trying to get lighter and lighter. I think the goal, you know, if you could talk through an iPad mini 4, you know, you could really, with a Google Fi, and you're interesting enough, by the way, you would think, well, how can you get Google Fi an iPad mini 4? Although you need to use an Android phone for Google Fi phone service. For data-only service, an iPad Mini 4 is actually, with cellular, you know, the cellular version, actually is supported. So you actually can throw that on Google Fi, which is kind of neat.
Cool. Very interesting.
Yep. Okay, so let's see if I stop talking about Chrome OS for a while, but I don't think so, because I'm finding it a really interesting experience. And like I said, I only turn on a MacBook or Windows PC on weekends now to process the podcast. That's pretty much it. Otherwise, it was the Chromebook all week last week. So it's been very interesting. I think it's a keeper. It's a little bit more expensive. I wanted to pay about $350 max. Ended up being $450. Kind of wish I'd waited for the Intel version, but I don't think it's going to be that much faster in this. For the Android stuff, at least, which is, you know, written for ARM. And I'm not sure what magic they're using to get Android apps to work on an Intel processor, but. Any case, Mobile Views Podcast number 198. Frank, if you're listening, we're going to try to get you on 200. And we will talk to you next time.